हरिः हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
We're on 23, is it? Devotional service. Now on the second paragraph. Maybe not. Not sure.
I wasn't here on Tuesday.
Ah, okay. Devotional service means to prosecute Krishna consciousness. No, to prosecute Krishna conscious activities, which are favorable to the transcendental pleasure of the Supreme Lord, Krishna. And any activities which are not favorable to the transcendental favor of the Lord cannot be accepted as devotional service. For example, great demons like Ravana, Kamsa, and Hiranyakashipu were always thinking of Krishna, but they were thinking of him as their enemy. This sort of thinking cannot be accepted as bhakti or Krishna consciousness. The impersonalists sometimes misunderstand devotional service in such a way that they divide Krishna from his paraphernalia and pastimes. Okay, So two different things here. Coming up is devotional service means it's favorable. So you have here is that they're thinking of Krishna. So that's very pious in that way. But at the same time, it is not favorable to Krishna. So they'll get liberation from it. Right? That's the thing, is that you do something in connection with Krishna. But if it's not favorable to Krishna, it will give liberation, but it won't give devotion. Right? So here there's no intent of devotion like that, though they're doing an activity that would be considered devotional, right? Or would be within the realm of something you would use as devotional service. Now, so one has to be very, very careful, therefore, when one is engaging so many things, you know, in one's life, because you have the technical aspects of seeing how the energies are working and all that. So what it is you're dealing with itself may not be favorable, but that you are engaging means that you are seeing it in that way because you want to purify yourself from that material attachment by understanding it's actually Krishna that you're attached to. Then that determination, that's devotional, right? But it doesn't mean that the effects of the activity that you're engaging will give you a devotional result. Does that make sense? Because you're doing that because it's your own attachments, it's your own needs. Does that make sense? So you'll be getting both results at once, right? Just like with devotional service, you're performing something to please Krishna, and it's favorable. So that activity itself, generally much of, it means something like chanting and this and that, but some activities may give, naturally give material results as a side thing. Right? You're trying to engage your family in Krishna consciousness in a favorable way. So it will gain both the devotional element of advancement, and it will gain the the interaction or the pleasures of that family interaction. Does that make sense? Because it's an appropriate activity that's being engaged in Krishna's service. You'll get both results. Its purpose is devotional, that's why you'll get that result. But because the medium you're using is the pious thing, you'll get the pious result also. Right? Now, how well you're understanding that, then that pious result can mean it's either just nice family relationships, or it can mean you become freed from material contamination by that. Does that make sense? Because being able to come to the Brahman platform, that's also a piety. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So, either one or both. You may get the facility that's there. It may free you from material contamination at the same time, because its intent was to please Krishna. You're getting the devotional benefit. Now, if the activity itself is not favorable to Krishna consciousness, to Krishna, then you're going to get whatever kind of result you would get from that. Does that make sense? So you're going to get the spiritual aspect because your intent is doing it for Krishna. But at the same time, is that material result will also be gotten. Now, the quality of that activity will give that particular kind of result. So if it's not a high-grade activity, then it won't give a high-grade material result, right? Just because it's connected to Krishna. But if you're using it technically to free yourself from the attachment by understanding the mechanics of how Krishna's energies are working, in other words, it's Brahman understanding, then one could get liberation from that, because that's the Brahman aspect. You understand? But if you're not, if you're just performing the activity and somehow or another claiming it's for Krishna, then you'll get that reaction of whatever that does. So if it's not a proper reaction, you'll get a not proper result. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? The thing goes at once. It's just like a simple example is that you cook a cauliflower sabji, you offer it to Krishna, but when you sit down and taste it, what will it taste like? Cauliflower, yes. Now, what if you cook something else? You cook a pumpkin sabji, what will it taste like? Pumpkin. So that's the point. There's whatever medium you use, that flavor will be obtained. So that's why, then if it's favorable to Krishna, it will always give a good result, because Krishna is only interested in, his activities are always nice, right? So then it's done nicely for Krishna with that attitude, it will always give a nice result. But if it's something that's not connected to Krishna, not favorable, then it won't necessarily give a favorable result. Like Kamsa and Ravana and Hiranyakashipu, they are fully absorbed in Krishna. Now, as a devotee who is thinking about Krishna in a favorable way, then they would, one, develop the devotional attitude, and they would be very happy. They'd be freed from all material misery, right? But these demons are thinking of Krishna. So in the process, they're not getting devotion, but because it's connected to Krishna, right? So therefore, on the lowest level, because they see him as enemy, right? You understand? So there's a quality, enemy. So therefore, they're dealing actually with the Brahman aspect of Krishna. They're remembering his form as Bhagavan, but their actual connection with him is as Brahman. Right? Not as Bhagavan. Right? Because it's not favorable. So they're getting liberated by this absorption, but at the same time as on the material platform, they're getting anxiety. Does that make sense? How the whole thing works, like that. In other words, the medium is important. So that's also this applying it in a different way. That's why then the spiritual master is important. You know, it's not just it's transcendental garbage can, right? You know, it takes your karma and then everybody else is directs them and guides them and all that, and therefore they come back and do the collection for the temple. Like that, you know what I'm saying? Because if it was simply pure, then why is the temple worried about the collection? You understand? So it's not that, the spiritual master comes to, we're the one. No, but you're worried about that. Because otherwise you worry about the spiritual, that would simply be how you engage someone. You understand? So this thing of just trying to negate or the importance of the spiritual master or the importance of the devotee's involvement and reduce everything down to simply the mechanics of what's going on, you know, freed from all cultural, impediments. But that's not etiquette. Etiquette means all those things are considered. Just like if you have Vastu Shastra, What does it mean? Does it mean it's easy? No, it means you have to really think about it. You know, how you're going to place everything so that you follow the Shastra, but at the same time you end up with everything you want in your house. So it means this endeavor. We're looking for the easy way out. Oh, Vastu means that, you know, it just happens. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not that, so it's just like it's easy. You call in some professional guy, they work it out, the architect works it out, whoever it is works it out, like that. But the thing is they are working according to a science. Right? And so just to say that their science doesn't really matter because you don't believe in it or you don't work with it doesn't make it any less important to that person. It's still going to be work. If you want any result, you have to work. It's just a matter of what work you do. They think about it, therefore you work at something else, and therefore you pay them. Right? So in other words, work is done. You didn't figure out your house layout according to Vastu. You worked at your job, and from that austerity, you got results as in the form of money. You give that to the person. Or you don't have to give the person anything because you went to the austerity and worked it out. So this idea that we're going to get something for nothing, that's actually a childish viewpoint. There's no such thing. It doesn't exist in the cause of creation. You get something for nothing. It just doesn't work. Right? Does that make sense? So now, yeah, so that's... Any questions on that? Is that clear? In other words, you will always... One is that you do something for pleasing Krishna. One, you try to make it favorable for Krishna. And because it's supposed to be favorable for Krishna, therefore the best quality of the medium that you can use to serve Krishna through, you would choose. Right? In other words, the Vedic rule is, if the number one option is not there, then you pick two. If two is not there, you pick three. Three is not there, you pick four. You know, if it keeps on going down, you know, till you're using the 100th option. Okay. But you would never use the 100th option if the 90th option was there. Right? Just saying, oh, well, it's easy. No, that's not the way it works. It just doesn't. In other words, the best option is not used because the best option is not available. But that doesn't mean the second best becomes now the standard. It's second best, but it's the best you can offer. The idea is we offer the best to Krishna. That's the standard. So if second best is all there is, then that's what you use. But you always know that there is a better stage. So that way, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, maybe the day after, you can offer the better. So if in this generation one can't, you know, work on certain levels of, you know, ideal forms of Krishna consciousness, the next generation can, or the generation after that can. But if we just say the present culture is just fine, that means the present culture is going to remain. And in fact, as the present culture doesn't have anything to drive it to excellence, then it will just get worse. But in other words, what's the drive? Right? It's either got to be sense gratification, you know, economics, religion, or liberation. Right? As human needs, these are the top four. Everything falls into these four categories. So you have to have one of them to be your drive. Right? So liberation definitely isn't generally most people's drive. It's not a common thing. Right? Then you have religion. Religion would establish that people behave properly and try to improve the quality of their life. Since that's not so popular, then economics becomes the prominent thing. So, but in general, for them to be successful at economics, they've worked out a system where they try to make everybody else inspired by sense gratification. Right? And so because they're interested in sense gratification, they will buy things that the person interested in economics therefore makes money from. Does that make sense? It takes them a long time to figure out that they're not very, how do you say, ideal. Like that. Once they decide on something, they get extremely attached. Okay, is that clear? All right. suffering. So that's why then the devotee is always looking at what is, in this situation, what's the best? Because you're trying to do for Krishna and please Krishna. Like that. So that means that whatever plan you have to do means, one is you make a plan based on the best possible that actually works. But as you apply it, then you may have to make adjustments according to the time, place, and circumstance. But that doesn't mean the time, place, and circumstance becomes the prominent element. Devotional service and pleasing Krishna is a prominent element. You want to say, oh, it's just practical. But the point is it's practical for what? I was just being practical, Prabhu. But in your being practical, what were you obtaining? You know, were you obtaining favorable devotional service to Krishna, or were you obtaining just it was easy for you because it got it done very quickly? This has to be able to be explained, right? And if one can't contemplate and understand one's own motive, how one's going to understand anyone else's? That means if you can't help yourself, you can't help anyone else. But the point is the process is, the process of helping others is how one helps oneself. Right? That's the highest welfare. That means that simultaneously, you would have to be helping yourself. Does that make sense? So best is you're helping others and cultivating yourself, because what you understand, you can explain that to someone else. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So then the next best is, on one level for personal development, is someone who's worried about their own personal development isn't dealing so much with others. He will at least develop to a point where he will eventually then take up helping others. The person who is just helping others, not really worried about himself, then as long as the absorption is complete and consistent, then through that one could either on that platform, you know, go back to Godhead, or he would be able to come to the platform where one is able to deal with oneself. And someone who doesn't work for others' welfare and doesn't work with themselves, then they don't really have a whole lot going for them. Like that. Does this make sense? The impersonalists sometimes misunderstand devotional service in such a way that they divide Krishna from his paraphernalia and pastimes. For example, the Bhagavad Gita is spoken on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And the impersonalists say that although Krishna is of interest, the battle of Kurukshetra isn't. The devotees, however, also know that the battle of Kurukshetra by itself has nothing to do with their business. But in addition, they know that Krishna does not mean just Krishna alone. He is always with his associates and paraphernalia. For instance, if someone says, give me something to eat, give something to eat to the man with the weapons, the eating process is done by the man, not by the weapons. Similarly, in Krishna consciousness, a devotee may be interested in the paraphernalia and locations, such as the battlefield of Kurukshetra, which are associated with Krishna. But he is not concerned with simply any battlefield. He is concerned with Krishna, his speech, his instructions, etc. It is because Krishna is there that the battlefield is so important. Right? So, in other words, it's connected to Krishna, it becomes important. If it's not connected to Krishna, it actually is not important for us. So to become expert and perfect in the material world, that's not actually the drive. Right? We want to be professional, we want to present ourselves as very educated or very organized. But that's okay. But what is, then there's Krishna consciousness. Right? And to then only be interested in Krishna and not in making everything else work properly, that's also then a problem. Right? Either one of them we can see is what has happened. Krishna is separated from his paraphernalia. You understand? So the devotee just goes on, it doesn't matter, and go out and get the money back from the demons and this and that. It's nice, he's kind of seeing, but he's not actually seeing that the field that is there is also connected to Krishna. So he could deal with people more nicely. So the problem, so is the problem here, this is the $64 million question. So is the problem in dealing with the public in such a way that you're only worried about Krishna and not about all the nonsensical, you know, stinky, smelly, you know, demons out there? And then from that, then you get this whole public backlash that's not actually a backlash to Krishna consciousness. It's a backlash to the cultural application or lack of it of, in dealing with society. What is the real problem? Right? Is it Krishna consciousness? Is it the culture of Krishna consciousness? Or is it the philosophical misunderstanding of those applying it that they didn't see Krishna, his service, and those things connected with that service all in connection with Krishna? Right? You answer this problem, then you understand what is the real need of ISKCON communications. Right? Dealing, how to deal with the public. In other words, present ourselves for who we actually are. So that means the devotees in the past weren't fully acting as we actually are. Because the devotee, because it's Krishna's creation, is also considerate of the creation. Just because someone's not a devotee doesn't mean you're not considerate, because even though the person doesn't know they're a devotee, they are still Krishna's living entity. The body is still made out of Krishna's energy. It's still functioning according to Krishna's direction. Just they're in illusion, they don't know that. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the one thing, and that was direct, that's why the famous mantra, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tardane, says the Western countries. Because the Indians can be really hardcore impersonalist, but still follow some culture and etiquette. But somehow or other, the West, in following their adaptation of impersonalism, they are totally unable to follow etiquette. Unless there is another consideration, which would be some economic or some other element. Then only for that reason will they be nice. Does that make sense? Otherwise, just efficiency at getting things done, because economics is everything. If you're working about that, then efficiency is based on the mechanics of the form that I get another mechanical form. Right? I have performed an activity, an observable activity that got an observable result. That's practical. So in one sense, you are working with the nature of something because you're only getting the result because you actually did it according to the nature. But the problem is the people who are dealing with it are not fully in knowledge. There's still some illusion there because they don't understand the inherent nature of something. Right? Because the modern culture, based as it is on the academia and the scientists, right, and impersonalism doesn't come to an actual conclusion. Right? Academia doesn't want anything to do with the conclusion. Science doesn't want anything to do with the conclusion. It's got to do with God. Impersonalists don't want anything to do with conclusion if God's a person. So in other words, God being a person, just being about God and religion anyway, these kind of things are what the impersonalists aren't approving of. Right? The scientists don't mind the mechanics of it. They don't mind seeing the inherent laws as long as they don't have to recognize the lawmaker. So that means there is no devotional content in its connection inherently. You have to impose it on the system. Not actually impose it. It naturally goes on the system. But if you don't know the natural form, you won't be able to do it. Does that make sense? And the academia, they just want to intellectually play with it because you shouldn't actually get any real result. Because if you did, then that means there's a conclusion and that my speculations, I can't just speculate on anything. I have to actually speculate in line with authority. I am not the authority. Does that make sense? So that being the basis, basically, of your Western culture, then impersonalism and voidism is the standard. Right? Not that they're all, you know, got the three-line tilak on their forehead. That makes them an impersonalist. So this is very important, these points, is that what is favorable. In other words, these last two paragraphs, then they sum up all these things before. Devotional service favorable to Krishna. That's important. And not separating Krishna from the field of activities. Right? Where he, you know, in other words, Krishna is the field of activities, so if you don't have Krishna, you can start from the field and see Krishna. And if you see Krishna, then see everything around him. Does that make sense? You know, just like, let's say, one of my favorite you know, how do you say, discussions. It's just like, let's say we're having a special program, that, you know, the deities are having an abhishek or some special puja. And so, therefore, all the devotees are there. And they're watching and they're enjoying. And then comes in our, you know, how you say, self-proclaimed God-authorized paparazzi, right? So then this individual paparazzo, then he'll come up to that, and he'll stand in the best spot to get the best picture, which is in front of everybody so no one can see, and claiming that their shot is more important than anyone else. Have you ever seen any of the pictures that any of these people have taken? Have you ever seen them? No. And if even if you've seen them, have you ever looked at them more than once? Right. And is that the thing that sticks in your mind the most about, let's say, that abhishek? Not in the least. So I don't know who they're joking with, that they're the ones that are taking the most important service. But they just love to get in everybody's way because they demand. So what are they doing here? What are they doing? Why is it a problem? Because they are taking a picture of Krishna, and they're going to use it in some form within ISKCON, you know, in some way, maybe, right? So then, how do you say? So the problem is this aspect that the impersonalists apply. They separate Krishna from the field he's in. So they're separating Krishna, the abhishek, from Krishna and the devotees who are watching the abhishek. You understand? So these things are extremely relevant. Extremely relevant. Right? We can say, and we've come, in other words, this is, and so simply Prabhupada says it. So in other words, all these technicalities that we've studied, you know, from the second canto and these other places where the Goswamis and the Acharyas are talking very carefully, breaking down devotional service, we see Prabhupada has given the essence here that's very easily understandable. Right? You don't have to go through months of studying second canto in the Chatur Shloki to be able to appreciate this point. He can just say it in one paragraph. Does that make sense? It's very, very important that we understand that these things that Prabhupada, they apply in our life. Otherwise you take it, you know, I'm fine. I'm okay, you're okay, we're all okay. Well, actually, I'm okay, you're okay, and the other guy, the third party, he's the one that has the problem. Right? Does that make sense? So we have to be very, very careful is that look into our life. And this is the introduction to nectar devotion. So that means that one is supposed to already be looking at this. Then one tries to take the information given the nectar devotion, how to apply, favorable devotional service to Krishna in your life, avoiding these pitfalls. It's the form of devotional service as explained by Rupa Goswami in their nectar devotion, but you're not actually doing it to please Krishna. Right? Or the other thing is in trying to saying that you're pleasing Krishna, you use forms that aren't actually that good. Right? You know, or something like the temple authority things, you know, preaching is the most important, so therefore, you know, deity worship is kind of a second, down from that. And so therefore, we won't spend properly money on the deities. We'll buy, you know, second grade, third grade vegetables. What does it matter? You know, because preaching is the most important. And this way, then he'll go out and buy his, you know, video camera and other things that he'll use, so-called use for preaching. Does it make sense? So there's a mistake here. Is that the person's not understanding the importance. You please Krishna, then everybody else will be pleased. Otherwise, you'll see in a situation like that, technically, mechanically, everything's going nicely, and then maybe you come in and look at it's a well-organized temple. But at the same time, is no one in the temple is really satisfied, and you'll probably see there are very few devotees in that temple. Or if not, come back a little later, that's what we'll see. You understand? Because they're not seeing the things in their proportion. It's not actually favorable to Krishna. It's service, in that particular service, but the problem is they're... the particular application is not favorable. Why isn't it favorable? Because they're not seeing the field. From the inverse. Just like, in other words, the impersonalist is the inverse of the other one. Right? In other words, they're seeing Krishna, but not seeing how he is the Lord of creation, they're his servant and all that. So they're actually, it's non-different. You know what I'm saying? It's just different flavors. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's why ultimately it all comes down, because both of them are trying to enjoy. And at the same time, and they're thinking they're going to get it in connection with material energy. In other words, the materialist, they're all materialists, but let's say the one committed to materialism then thinks that by interacting with the material nature in a favorable way, I will enjoy, I'll be happy, I'll be like this. While the impersonalist, he knows that that doesn't work, so his enjoyment is, if I can get away from the material world, I'll be happy. But you see, for both of them, that the materialist and the impersonalist, they're both, in other words, karma and jnana, they're both, is based, their foundation is the material world. It's not actually the spiritual world. Right? Just because you get away from the material world, where else can you go? Right? You have to go to the Brahman level. If you want to step outside the material world, you have to go to the Brahman. You don't have another place you can have that vantage point from. But it's not the spiritual world in that it's not the spiritual planets. Of course, the Brahman is part of the spiritual world. It's the effulgence of the spiritual world. But it in itself isn't the spiritual world. You know what I'm saying? You know, the man is there, and he's very dynamic, very active, therefore he has money. But because you have his money doesn't mean you have the man. So the real point is the man won't, the money won't generate the man, but the man can generate the money. So it's the planets that are important. Right? Because on those planets, then you have Krishna and Vishnu. You understand? So you're looking at it from two different sides. That's why they're always presented together. You're looking at one aspect there. Okay, I'm following all the rules and regulations, but I don't, you know, so the form is very important, but I'm not actually connecting it properly to Krishna. The other is I'm looking at Krishna and everything like that, and it can either be from the philosophical or from the aspect of, you know, the bhav and the mood and all that, but I disconnect the field. Right? One, the mechanics is correct, but the actual application to Krishna is not correct. The other is you're trying to deal with Krishna. Supposedly, it's more focused on him, but the mechanics don't matter to you. Right? So this is niyamagraha. Right? You follow the rules and regulations, but don't actually know what they're for. Or you reject the rules and regulations because you don't actually know what they mean and you think you're the smartest person on the planet. So therefore your conclusion that if I don't understand it, it has no value. But that's Buddhism, right? If I don't hear the tree fall, it didn't make sound. So if I don't understand it, it means it's not important. That's Buddhism. You understand? So all these things are there. It's just which is prominent, that's all. So then we'll classify, yes. They don't want to reach a conclusion, because if you conclude something, speculation is over, isn't it? As they know it.
So they can't keep doing it.
Yeah, that's the whole point. That's why it's an unspoken law. Probably you could say, in the negative, the most strongly unspoken law in modern academia is you cannot say that conclusively this is the absolute truth. You can say these are truths. But what is the context in which you see them and all that? That's up for individual explanation. Because they feel if you come to a conclusive truth, then there is no more intellectualizing. Then you just have to get down to work. Right? Which is true, but it doesn't mean there's no more intellectual activity. What it means is that instead of intellectual activity being the prominent, then it's balanced with application. And then that's why they're armchair speculators. They don't want to get out of their armchair. Especially nowadays, you know, if the armchair gives you a massage, you with your remote, you can run the television. If you got one of those fancy remotes, you can control 15 different things in the house. You can turn the lights on and off, your oven, your everything like that. So what's the need? You know what I'm saying? And as you see in the, because they'll go by their own speculations and others in the mood, that a lot of times when you have these science fiction concepts of futuristic, then your real intellectuals, they don't even, sometimes they can't even move. They're just a brain. Or they're some guy with a huge brain that just sits, you know, all day and telepathizes and stuff like that. They don't even talk. Or even if they do talk and interact, and they're doing so with, you know, some computer that just, you know, works in space and stuff like this. You know, but the whole idea is it's all just, it's just a brain, and they don't actually physically do anything. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay. You say? Yes, yes, that's true, that's true. Yes, how to understand it so you can apply it. Because we see as in all these schools, the six schools, even though they're bogus and that many of them will work a lot on speculation, and they're all speculative, but their goal is something practical. It has to be practically applied that will get a practical result. Well, the modern academia, other than gaining some knowledge and appreciating that knowledge, it doesn't have any form. So what's interesting is those things that are more, let us just look at that point itself. Is that, what is the curriculum of the modern day school? Because if you go back, you know, 50 years even, like that, especially 100 years, the curriculum was quite different. If you go back a few hundred years, it was even more in the same direction as 100 years back, even more. So education meant what would refine and develop an individual as a human being, like that. It wasn't so much focused on occupation as it was as him as an individual. Occupation that you gain by association with someone who was doing that. The administration you learn from administrators, business from businessmen, skills and trades you learn from them, right? And the intellectual activities, of course, you learn that because you studied with them, you associated with them, they're teachers, therefore you become a teacher. Right? Previously, you didn't have to do a B.Ed. to become a teacher. You had the degree you could teach. Right? So occupation came by association. And so what you were developing actually was yourself as a refined human being. So therefore, you know, the great epics, the great literatures, your poetry, your music, all these different things were very important, you know, astrology and all these kind of things, so you understood where the universe was and that. So they didn't just learn math, science, that if you were learning math, you were majoring in math, you also had to learn music. You also had to learn astrology. And I forget what's the fourth one of the math, the quadrivia. It was, you know, it had math, oh, rhetoric. I think rhetoric was, there was rhetoric and trivia. Because language was in trivia. Yeah, I think it was. So you had to think logically. You had mathematics, which is there. You had astrology, so you understood your position within the creation. And you had music that was based on math, you know, so to refine the things. So all these things in there. And then the other was, is you learned the language, the grammar and all that, but then you had to learn literature and other things that you were applying it to. So now let's say 50 years ago, you still have it now, but it's not very prominent. Is, let's say, something like a poetry class or other things like this wouldn't be very prominent now, but if you go back 100 years, if someone wanted to give somebody an instruction or was an asked, you know, like a very deep personal, question, you know, that they had, generally the answer they would get would be some quote from poetry or some great literature, right, about how someone who is considered, you know, important in the Western, you know, purview, that they would be quoted on what they did or what they said or what they heard or, you know what I'm saying? Some passage would be quoted, and then the other person, because he studied that, would understand and go, thank you. You know, I didn't look at it that way. Or, you know, you're so bewildered that you didn't look at all. So, you know what I'm saying? But nowadays, then those would be considered not very important classes. Because so-called, well, how are they practical? Because being a human being isn't actually important these days. Right? Being a cog in a machine that generates economics for the guys who own the machine or run the machine or have made the machine, that's the important thing. Right? So now that aspect then becomes very, you know, disturbing. But it becomes more disturbing when you look at it as they've thrown out poetry and literature and those things. Not saying that they're valuable, but at least they were for the purpose of refining the human being. They don't know that, yes, it should be literature, Bhagavatam, the Vedic literature. It should be like that. You learn poetry, you learn the, you know, the verses of the scriptures. So they say that they're just not taking it far enough. But is then the things that they learn in your regular school today, how useful actually is that? Right? With what you learned in high school, can you go out and get a job? Yes, you can. You know, flipping burgers down at the local, you know, burger house. That's what you can do. You know? You know what I'm saying? Because in other words, they've used this process of, no, it has to be practical, but they only slightly apply it. That's the fun part. So they leave the whole speculative, absolutely useless elements of it. Right? And even if it is something, it does have some substance. Okay, you learn science and this and that, as if, you know, that science is really going to do something for you. Then from there, you can get into engineering or, you know, doctors or law or something like that. Then that will be useful, but it means the education up through 12 years of education actually doesn't really have any substance. It may be considered a basis for what you're going to learn at the university level. Right? So different from the Vedic that you only learn things that are of substance. Otherwise, why would you learn it? You know what I'm saying? You don't learn about how Jack and Jill went up the hill to, you know, to fetch a pail of water. Right? And so, because what are you going to learn from that? But you learn how, you know, all these different brahmacharis and that serve their spiritual masters and their ashrams and all that in the Mahabharata and then the other Vedic literatures, and then how that developed their characters so that in the future, because they went up the hill to get a pail of water, therefore then when they're adults and they have their families, they can do something. Right? So here the problem is, what are you going to learn? Jack and Jill went up the hill. Okay, they went to get the pail of water. Nice. But the problem is the pail of water is too heavy for Jill, and Jack is too enamored by Jill. And so there was no water. Right? You know what I'm saying? But generation after generation, every kid knows that. You know? Every kid knows it. Yes. So it just means that, you know, that. So what you're saying is that, you know, then the element of the wife follows the husband and all that?
He falls down and so she falls down.
I see, okay. So, okay. So you see, he's able to get something out of it. So this is the...
Only from your right. Huh? Only through your explanation.
Oh, okay. Okay, now this is we'll stop with this basically, this point here, just to make it very, very clear. Then we may be able to finish tomorrow. So Prabhupada continues. This is the summary understanding of what Krishna consciousness is. Without this understanding, one is sure to misunderstand why the devotees are interested in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. One who is interested in Krishna becomes interested in his different pastimes and activities. In other words, what is connected to Krishna, that is of interest. If you're interested in Krishna, you'll be interested in what is connected to him. Right? So that's why Prabhupada is always pointing out, you know, it's not just 10th canto is interesting, we're interested in the whole thing because Krishna is involved right from the beginning. The whole thing's about Krishna. That's our interest. So nothing is left unturned because it's connected to Krishna. So that means then how to deal with that. Like Arjuna was very expert at dealing with that battlefield. Right? Because he was trained in how to deal with that. So the point is how to be trained to understand how to deal with the material energy. But that dealing with material energy is only important because Krishna is involved. Krishna is not involved, what do we care? Right? Does that make sense? Right? Like Rita Ananda Maharaj wanted to learn Sanskrit. Prabhupada told him, what's the use? Right? So he didn't bother. He just took the books and slid them off the end of the table into the garbage can, you know, back in the 70s. But we see because he was into it's Vedic, learn Sanskrit, this, that, blah. So he was interested in feel, well, where's Krishna? But then later on, after Prabhupada goes, then he's the one that studies the Sanskrit and translates the book because now Krishna's involved. Does that make sense? So one could say is it's not the Sanskrit, it's Krishna's connection to it. That makes the Sanskrit important, therefore we're expert at the Sanskrit. Because Krishna's involved. But if Krishna's not involved, what do we care? Does that make sense? Okay, so we'll end this and we'll continue tomorrow. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So you're saying that we should readjust that this rendition of Jack and Jill is actually inappropriate for the modern age. Why wasn't Jill carrying the bucket? She fell over and Jack is tumbling after. Yes, it's politically incorrect.
That should be Jill and Jack went up the hill.
Yes, Jill and Jack went up the hill.
Because Jill wanted to.
Yeah, because Jill wanted to. And Jack was making the arrangements. Submissively. Very important. I don't know where it happened. It got lost. But I had this book. It was actually two volumes of politically correct bedtime stories. And they actually went through. I mean, it was done in tongue in cheek, but it was. They went through and completely corrected anything that was not politically correct. From the common story, you know, Cinderella and, you know, Hansel and Gretel and everything like that. You know, Hansel and Gretel is that they were living in the forest and all that, and they came, and there's the Wicked Witch, and they were eating the house. But the main problem was is that Hansel or Gretel's father was a big, you know, industrialist who was, you know, clearing that whole forest that the gingerbread house was in, so that... And you say, then to put up, you know, some kind of big, you know, either industrial or commercial complex of some variety. And so then all the, you know, their political protesting and all that, you know, they're out there and the witches out there and all the animals are out there and everything like this. But then the corporate, you know, they come in because they're so powerful and all that, and they catch them all. And, you know, even though they got in and tried to blow up the place, but, you know, they weren't allowed and all this. And so then the witch had to come into play. And so then she turned, they built this whole factory. They cut down the forest. They built this whole, you know, mall or whatever it is like that. And so then the witch turned, you know, the whole thing into either another gingerbread house or a big, you know, huge block of cheese, and turned all the corporate people into, you know, rats who then went in and were eating it and so like this. And so this way then it was very politically correct. All the nuances, of course, I'm missing, but the major concepts. Yeah, you know, or like the Little Red Riding Hood, like that, you know, so... The you know, comes down at the end, so she picks the flowers, she goes to grandmother's house, the wolf is there and everything, and then, you know, the big bag wolf is going to eat Little Red Riding Hood, I think already eaten grandmother. So then the lumberjack comes in and all that, and then swings with his axe and cuts off Little Red Riding Hood's head, because he felt, you know, and then the wolf says, oh, thank you very much, you know, I was being victimized by these people trying to put me into a certain, you know, that I'm a wolf and I have to act in a different way and all that. And then the lumberjack says, no, you're not getting away with being the victim here, I'm the victim. Because, you know, I take care of this forest and I'm in the forest, and this Little Red Riding Hood came and picked some very rare, you know, how you say, what's it when they're about to get extinct? Endangered species of flowers, you know, just to bring for her own selfish purposes to her grandmother. So that's why then she was, you know, like that, and he was the victim. Yes, yeah, so each one of these, they have some very interesting, very strange twist like that, because they're making it politically correct. So,
what effect would that have on a child?
I don't know if they'd relate to them. I think they're generally books that adults who have listened, who heard these stories as children would appreciate. I don't think the kids would really care. You know what's in danger? What's this? That's not in the parent. Yeah.